very, very shortly. Rodney Hogg is going to join us. He's got a very special guest with us as well. The Winter Champion Series, of course, he's brought to you by the Sensational Seafood Sundays at Ribera's in North Melbourne for just $99. Two-course lunch for two, including a bottle of wine. Sensational Seafood Sunday as well. Friday's Friends of Ribera's, and that means six freshly shucked oysters and a beer for just $15 between 4 p.m. and 7 for the freshest and best seafood. You can't go past Ribera's, 480 Victoria Street in North Melbourne. Just a 10-minute walk to Etihad. Phone them on 9329 1634.
I was throwing rocks at the TV when Faulkner was a sixth bowler used. For Michael Clarke to come on the fourth bowler in front of Faulkner is an absolute disgrace. What a load of junk that is. Kim tried to tell me one day, I think it was about 84, and West Indies, he tried to tell me it's a team game. And I said, no, it's not, Kim, it's an individual's game.
Right, you're bloody well right.
On Halftime, right, Rodney Hall.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Well, Hoggy, you've done it again, another Winter Champions Series edition here on Halftime, and we've had some of the greats of all time. Today, we have one of the great characters in cricket and a fine performer in his own right, probably underutilised for mine throughout his Test career. 12 tests for Australia, 38 one days, terrific hairstyle, and a very, very fine left arm bowler. It is, of course, Mike Whitney who joins us. G'day, Mike.
Thank you, Daniel. The hair's still there, mate. I'm lucky.
Oh, good luck to you. I've got none.
Good to talk to you, Whit. And we've had a lot of guys on who've, some have played 140, 150 test matches, but they haven't got much to talk about. And you've only played 12. And I reckon every test match you played in your whole life has just been, it's just been so interesting.
It has, Hoggy. And every one of those tests was an exciting one. I've got wonderful memories from all of those. And, you know, as you would, it's a hard thing to forget. I actually think about it now, 20-odd years down the track from retirement, and it feels a little bit surreal because after that, I've been in the television thing for 22 years, and I often think if it had just been the cricket, that would have been enough. If it had been the TV, that would have been enough. But both of them together, it's been amazing, mate.
And 21 years of Weekender, is it? We're down here in Melbourne, we don't get the Weekender. I don't think we do, but you've done 21 years in that one as well as Gladiator and Who Dares Wins.
I've almost forgotten about Gladiators, but yep, I was the referee on that for I think three or four series. John Alexander did the first one, and I was the ref for the rest of it. And Who Dares Wins, of course, that was like 95, 96, 97, and that made a huge impact. It was really the first show of that kind, like reality TV. The word hadn't even been invented then. So it was cutting-edge stuff, and a lot of the reality TV, which I must apologise for, because some of it's absolute crap, all spawned from Who Dares Wins. But you were right about Sydney Weekender. I started doing that show in 1995, and it's a weekly show, and I'm still doing it. And sometime this year, I think about August, I'll do my 900th episode.
Jeez.
And it's been fantastic. I've had an absolute ball. We only film it within New South Wales. And being a diehard blue bagger, mate, that's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, we were up in China about, I don't know, four years ago, I reckon. We're up there, and I'm walking down the street with you, and this little Chinese chap said, "Who dares wins? Who dares wins?"
I honestly, we haven't made that since 1997, and they played it for a few years after that, like repeated it. But I get asked about it, mate, 10 times a week.
Yeah, amazing.
This age group of people that when they were kids, it was like the show to watch, and now they're sort of 20 to 35, and they all come up, they go, "You're going to dare me?" Or "Who dares wins?" Or "Where's Tanya?" That's what most of them
want. Where's Tanya?
Yeah, where's Tanya? And I tell them, not with you, champion.
I don't reckon you would have been a fast bowler when you were a young kid. You're a rugby player, weren't you?
Yeah, love my rugby league, and I'm still a tragic South Sydney supporter, and I played rugby league up until I was 20, but strangely enough, I hurt my knee, and I had to have a cartilage out. Remember in those days, before the keyhole surgery, you had the big, long scar down one side of your leg, and they just ripped the whole cartilage out, and the doc, I think I was playing second grade for Randwick then, and the doctor said, "I think you should not play rugby league, your knee won't last, you should keep playing cricket." And then the end result was one knee operation from rugby league and another eight from cricket and being a fast bowler.
There's a fair load goes through the knees as a fast bowler. That doctor wasn't very smart, was he?
No, he had no idea, obviously. Yeah.
But so when did you actually physically take up genuine fast bowling?
Well, I turned up at Randwick 1976, just after I'd finished year 12 or sixth form, as it was called then.
So you're about 16? 16?
7-8.
Yeah.
I'd been playing for junior cricket for Botany United, and I bounced this bloke on the mats one day, and little did I know he was an ex-Randwick first grader, and he rang up the Randwick secretary and said, there's this maniac left arm fast bowler with a Michael Jackson haircut playing in the South Sydney competition for Botany United, and you should get him down to Randwick. So the Randwick secretary, a bloke called Lyle Gardner, who's still a dear friend of mine, rang my house, and my mum kept answering the phone, and I kept saying no. And eventually my mum said, you won't say no to this bloke, you'll go and play for these people. And I played a fourth grade game just up the road from my house at Matraville at Snake Park at Maroubra.
What year was that, sorry? What year?
That was 1976.
76, you're playing in the fourths in 1976.
Yeah, October, about September, October 1976. And I took 4 for 16, and that was the turning point for me. I just thought, wow, I really enjoyed playing on a turf wicket, and away we went. And 2 seasons of fourth grade, a season of second grade, and then a season of first grade in 79-80, where I took like 45 wickets in 10 games. I didn't get in the side till just before Christmas, and that got me into the state squad the following year, and I made the first game.
80-81.
Yeah, and Queensland together.
And I reckon what you've got different to the young fast bowlers today is you bowled and bowled in the nets, and that's how you learnt your game, and games and in out in the middle as well, but you did a lot of bowling, didn't you?
Bowled all afternoon when I was down at grade cricket, and of course when you get into the state setup, it gets a bit more refined. You know, I had Len Pascoe and Jeff Lawson, and I watched what they did, and they didn't bowl all afternoon, but they definitely bowled at least for an hour. And that was not including sort of warming up and warming down. It was all sort of warm up, stretch, bowl off a, you know, bowl off 5 or 10 paces for, you know, a dozen, maybe 20, just to warm up, and then you're bowling at 80 or 90% for an hour.
In 1981, you slipped over to Fleetwood just to have a couple of games in the Lancashire League.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you'd played 3 or 4 Shield games at that stage. How many Shield?
4 Shield games.
Four Shield games. Yeah. And you've rocked up in Australia looking for a fast bowler because Lawson broke down, Hogg broke down, yeah. Rackerman broke down. They're looking around and all of a sudden up you pop.
Yeah, there I was. Thanks very much, mate.
In the right place at the right time. With so little cricket, what was it like bowling to names like Gooch and Boycott and Botham and Gatting?
It obviously changed my life that moment, but I'd got a bit lucky. Playing at Fleetwood, I had a mate down at Gloucestershire on an SO scholarship, a guy called Greg Geese. And Mike Proctor and another guy called Brian Brain, who had been at Gloucester for years and taken thousands of wickets, they both broke down. So Goosey rang me up and said, look, I've mentioned your name. Come down for a trial, which I did. And I'd actually played a couple of first-class games for Gloucestershire and a couple of one-dayers just before you guys broke down. And then I got this phone call from Fred Bennett to come up to Manchester. And the next day, I'm walking out. I'm rooming with DK Willie, and I'm walking out to play my 7th first-class game. And like, you were there, you know, and you were... I looked up, mate. Growing up, I'd watched all you guys play. Next minute, I'm in the hotel on the bus, going to the ground, and I'm bowling first change behind DK Lilly and Terry Alderman. And Clemmy Alderman had, you know, that tour, yeah, where he took 45 plus and Dennis had taken like 40, and it was an amazing series. Ian Botham cut loose after being sacked as the captain and all this sort of stuff, and there I was,
you were
walking out onto Old Trafford to bowl first change.
Was there a moment when Fred Bennett called you that you thought this is a setup and someone's just taking the mickey out of me here?
Yeah, I actually hung the phone up. I thought it was a moment. Yeah, I was sitting on the balcony at Cheltenham playing for Gloucester against Hampshire, and the phone come out, brought out by the room attendant, and he said, oh, Mr. Whitney, there's a phone call for you here. And this voice went, you've been selected to play for Australia. And I said, oh, look, you know, PAQ, you jerk, you know, you turn up. Hung up, and Fred rang back, and I'd met Fred in Sydney. He was the president of Balmain Cricket Club and the chairman of Cricket New South Wales at the time. and or the president, no, chairman of Cricket New South Wales, and he rang back and said, "Michael, this is Fred Bennett, manager of the team. Get in the bloody car and come up to Manchester now." So I did, and roomed with DK. I mean, that was like, you know, rooming with God for me at the time. This bloke was one of, you know, the all-time heroes of every young fast bowler in Australia. And then, of course, was Hoggy, who was a hero. You're a hero as well. Henry, I'd played a couple of games with for New South Wales. Terry Alderman was absolutely on fire. Kim Hughes, Graham Yallop. I mean, it was insane, mate.
Was there any time to get nervous? Was that one of the benefits that you were just sort of thrown in very, very quickly so you didn't have to think about it too much?
Yeah, probably, because that's what happened. I arrived the afternoon before the first day's play. Wasn't even time for me to roll my arm over. I did that in the morning of the game. And we went out and we bowled first. So I was out there the next morning at 11 o'clock and bowled my first spell, probably after drinks, if I remember rightly. It was surreal.
That is an amazing introduction to international cricket, Mike. Hoggy's very keen, I know, to continue this. We'll do that after the break. Mike Whitney is our special guest on the Winter Champion Series on Halftime. Hoggy's with us, and our special guest today in the Winter Champion Series is the man with the best hair in cricket, Mike Whitney.
Your third test match is that famous draw at the MCG. You take 4 for 92. McDermott takes 5 for 97 in the first innings against New Zealand. And then McDermott is 10 not out of 32 deliveries, and you're 2 not out of 18 deliveries. And you're forced a draw against the great Sir Richard Hadley.
Yeah, I reckon he was unlucky that day, Hoggy.
No, 18 deliveries.
Mate, it was, look, again, so much going on at the time. Like, AB had not won a series as a captain. We were 1-0 up in the series, one in Brisbane, drew in Sydney. This is in Melbourne. They had the Trans-Tasman Cup. So if Richard bowls either Billy McDermott or me out and they win the test, the test is drawn, and they retain the Trans-Tasman Cup. If we draw it, or get the 35 runs or whatever was required, we win the series 2-0, we get the Trans-Tasman Cup. Richard bowled out Tony Dottermade for me to go in. With that wicket, he took 5 for in the second innings, which was his 8th 10-for in a match, which was a world record at the time. And he also equaled Ian Botham's world record, I think, which was like 377 at the time. Beefy got a few more, but he equaled it at the time. So he only had to get me or Billy out, and he's a new world record holder. So I'm walking out there with all this going through my head because they announced it over the PA, and I knew AB hadn't won a series. And I'm just thinking, man, how did I get to this? And my batting average at the time was about 0.6. So I reckon Richard, even though he bowled 30-odd overs in the day, and was exhausted, fancied himself big time, and I just couldn't nick him. He bowled about 4 or 5 unbelievable outswingers that Don Bradman wouldn't have got an edge on. And I thought, if he keeps bowling there, he'll never get me out.
I'm safe.
Yeah. There was a couple of LBWs and a couple off Danny Morrison in the second last over, which were exceptionally close but turned down by that fantastic New South Wales umpire, Dick French, who looked me in the eye at one and said, "That's not out." And I thought, whoa. they would have been given that one to the third umpire nowadays for sure. But, we laughed. And again, people pull me up and talk to me about that time.
But we see you jumping up and down, but you nicked the cricket ball.
Well, after the game, because Richard Hadley tried to run me out after I blocked the last one, and I run back into my crease and started celebrating, but he'd underarmed the ball, so Ian Smith picked it up. And during the sort of presentations of the Trans-Tasman Cup to AB, who had just won his first series as a captain, Smithy walked over and said, "You've earned this," and gave me the ball. Now, I didn't really think about Richard getting 10 for or 5 for in the second innings, and you know what it's like, Hoggy, that's a really precious thing for you. I took 2 7-fers in Test cricket. I've got both those balls. They really mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
But I never thought about it. Anyway, kept the ball, put it away in my memorabilia. A couple of years ago, I'm emceeing a series of luncheons and dinners for a friend of mine who had bought out Viv, Beefy, and Richard, all knighted now, Sir Richard Hadley, Sir Rambo, them, Sir Viv Richards. And they did a tour up and down the East Coast called A Big Night, K-N-I-G-H-T, A Big Night Out, and I was the MC. Richard happened to say one day, "Have you still got that ball?" And I went, "Yeah." He said, where is it? I said, it's in one of my kits, put away in a cardboard box with about 10 balls that I've kept. He said, it's the only ball that I took a fifer with that I don't have out of my 36 fifers. I went, unlucky. Anyway, fast forward to about 8 months ago, my sister said, we've got to clean out some stuff at my mum's. And I had a few kits there, and I knew it was in this particular kit. And I opened it up, and there was the box. And first ball I put my hand on was this ball, and started feeling a bit guilty after 27 years of having this ball that it probably deserved to be. Richards, he took the fifer, all this sort of stuff. So I sent him an email and said, I'm going to give it to you on permanent loan. It's my ball. I own it. But I'm giving it to you, because he's pretty good with his memorabilia too, Rich, and he can tell you every wicket that he ever took and where it was. So I know how he feels about it. But yeah, I managed to get down to Melbourne just before the World Cup final on the Friday night and surprised him at a dinner that he didn't know I was going to be at, and presented him the ball in front of this group of Trans-Tasman business people. So he was thrilled. He was actually stuck for words and a little bit emotional over it, because that completes his set now.
Yeah.
And it was a ball he took five for with.
And your fourth test match was at Adelaide Oval, an amazing game for you, because you got one of your sevenfers.
Yeah.
And the sevenfer in a test match is just amazing. 7 for 89. Interesting. That was the game, and I often do some gigs with Merv and Dino, and Dino always talks about his 216 there, and Merv talks about his 72 not out, and how they met Don Bradman after the game.
Yeah.
And obviously you would have been in there, and I think Patrick Pattis, some of the West Indians also met Sir Donald after the game. We can turn it into a sporty.
Mate, it was so amazing. I mean, just to see Sir Donald Bradman in the dressing room and stuff like that's always fantastic. And it was a big game for me, the seventh. You know, you wait for that performance, don't you, Hoggy and Daniel, to you go, well, mate, I have actually bowled really well today and I can mix it at this level. But look, Dino's 200 was amazing and Merv's 70 was amazing. Anyway, we get into the West Indies dressing room and Viv's introducing Sir Donald to the team, and he gets to Patrick Patterson, and Patrick stands up and says, you know, like, I couldn't believe that you're so small, Sir Donald. And I'd be thinking that if I was playing you, that I could bowl you out. And the whole room just hushed. I was actually standing next to Bernie who nudged me and said, geez, that's an effing big call, isn't it? And I went, yeah. And Bradman looked up at him and said, well, I don't know about that, champion. You couldn't get Merv Hughes out today. And we went, yes, Donald.
That was a great test. Hoggy mentions the 7 wickets, and any test match, that's extraordinary. But you're talking about moments you've arrived, and even that the story before about that the call-up for the first test, and you admired Dennis Lilley and Hoggy and Terry Alderman and Jeff Lawson, those guys, watching them from afar. You're playing the West Indies in your fourth test, and you've got Greenidge out, you've got Richardson, Hooper, Richards, Marshall, Ambrose and Walsh. I mean, that's pretty awesome cricketers you were dealing with at that stage, too, on the opposition team.
They were still one of the best teams, you know, if not the best team in the world. I mean, we were vying for that position at the time, but they still had, you know, plenty of guns. And I mean, just to play against, you know, I'm humbled now to sort of say, yeah, I played against Viv and Richie Rich, you know, Gordon Greenidge, Desi Haynes. I mean, these guys were some of the greats of all time in West Indies cricket and world cricket. And to knock a few of them over, yeah, nice to have that on the record.
Well, speaking about your record, you didn't play a lot of cricket without, I'm not being disrespectful there, but you've got Lara out 5 times in both forms, Sashin twice, Richie Richardson 5, Viv twice, Hainsey 4 times. Well, I was going to throw in Tavray, but that doesn't really count, Tavray. But so you've got some great names. So you knew how to get the real good players out. And to get 7 for... Well, how did you get that 7 for? Had you taught yourself a little bit of Adelaide Oval, bit of reverse swing, or no? On that occasion,
we had, and that's a really good question, Hobby, because we'd been toying around with that at New South Wales, and you'd remember this, every time you come to Sydney, right through the whole 80s, it was a turner. It was a flat turner, and fast bowlers could not get a lot out of it. So Henry and I had started playing around with that Irish swing, but we didn't really know much about it. Then Imran turned up and had a season for us, I think in 84-5, and the Pakistanis were masters at it, and he showed us how to do it. And after that, we bowled it religiously in Sydney and anywhere else that it would work. It wouldn't work in Perth. It worked in Adelaide, maybe in Melbourne, never in Brisbane. So there was a couple of wickets. If the wickets were dry and conditions were good and the ball got scuffed up, he showed us how to prepare the ball and it would swing. So if it wasn't doing much with the new pill, we were waiting for it to scratch up and start swinging out, and that's how I got all of those wickets in Adelaide.
Well, you've got 180. You've played 118 first-class games, and you've got 412 wickets at 26. Now, nearly every second game you play was in Sydney, and Sydney favoured spins. So that is an amazing record, and as you say, Imran, do you want to pass on, please? I'd like to know what Imran told you about. It'd be pretty interesting to be able to catch him, and he would have left straight after the game, wouldn't he? In a Mercedes, nah, straight after the game, wouldn't he?
He was fantastic.
Was he?
I actually missed half that season with a knee operation, but just hanging around, still at training, and I played a few games, and he was fantastic, mate. Yep, he really imparted a lot of knowledge. He was the ultimate professional. He hung out with the boys, put a couple of parties on in his apartment that Cricket New South Wales had organised him in the city. He was fantastic. Could not say a bad word about him. And he bowled. He bowled his heart out and he batted hard.
Yeah.
Trained really hard.
What do you mean batted hard? I thought you were going to say partied hard.
He did that as well. And there was always a few extra girls hanging around, which was a bonus for us young fellas then. We were all single and they were good sort.
You've got to take your opportunities when they arise. Mike, we need to get to a break. Mike Whitney is our very special guest on the Winter Champion Series. Hoggy's with us as well, and we'll all be back after this. Welcome back to Halftime. We are going down memory lane in the Winter Champion Series with Mike Whitney and Rodney Hogg.
Your fourth test match was a draw, 89, but you don't play again until, and that was a seven for in Adelaide Open, you don't play again until, I think it's Sabina Park in March 91, so there's a fair gap in between. A bloke's just taken a seven for, doesn't play again for, that's a bit over 2 years. Is that the bad knee or just selection or a lot of depth in fast bowling around in the Australian setup then?
Yeah, there was, you know, Merv and Billy were sort of, you know, the two key fast bowlers and a lot of good guys backing them up as well. I had really good seasons in between, you know, those two test matches, and I was always knocking on the door. You know, I don't think I was ever one of the first of to be thought to be picked, but I just tried to be consistent and sort of maybe provide a role in Australian cricket if someone gets injured or you want someone to bowl first change uphill into the wind. I'm happy to do all that. And I think maybe that's why I was selected on a couple of tours to go to Sri Lanka and the West Indies. They knew I'd do, you know, as much of the hack work as I wanted to. I loved it. You know, I just enjoyed being there. But, yeah, every time I got selected to play a test, I tried to take advantage of that because, for me, I always thought that might be my last and I've got to keep, you know, hacking away and charging away.
What about the one-day cricket? You were playing a bit of one-day cricket through that time, Mike. Did you enjoy the one-day variety?
I didn't at the start, Daniel. I just, you know, it shut you down a little bit. You couldn't use a lot of, as much variety in your bowling, it tempered you with the short pitch delivery and all that sort of stuff. It was like bowl in this box.
Yeah.
And that was it. Field restrictions, all this sort of stuff. But I came to learn at the end of the 80s, like 89, 90, where I was getting a few one-day games and not particularly being in the test side, that it was a platform that you could springboard into the test side off. So I really learned how to bowl on the spot, restrict the run getting. I mean, I think my job in all those one days was, you know, take a wicket if that comes. But if I bowled really well and went for less than three and over, that was going to create pressure and someone was going to get out.
And you're always prepared to work into the wind, which was pretty crucial. If there's three quicks, someone's got to do a lot of the work into the wind and you were prepared to do it.
Yeah, I was happy to go uphill into the wind and probably for the last 20-odd of my one-day games under AB and Bobby Simpson, we came up with a plan that I'd bowl uphill into the wind and bowl my 10 straight off the top. And I was happy to do that. You know, it was a long spell. It usually went for about an hour and a half. So I went through drinks and maybe 20 minutes after that. But I was really fit and really happy to do it. And if I could contain them to around 30 or 35 runs off my 10, that really started to create a lot of pressure.
You're the most economical bowler. You're talking about your economy before, Mike. Your most economical bowler through the 92 World Cup campaign. So you must have found your radar by then.
Yeah, I did. I was really at the top of my game then, and really stoked to play in that World Cup, which was, of course, the first one before the last one that we won. But we didn't play very well. We lost the first couple of games. The first one in New Zealand, Martin Croke had a fantastic 100. I didn't actually play that game. But because we got hammered, I think I slipped into the side and went all right after that. But, yeah, we sort of didn't get a lot of momentum. I think we were playing Test cricket only a couple of weeks before that, and it wasn't a real long preparation and a bit disappointing. But for me, just, you know, to be the most economical bowler was a bit of a triumph as well and a nice thing to, and it, you know, meant that I sort of did my job that was required. So, but a great experience playing the World Cup at home in Australia, and really enjoyed the experience. It was fantastic.
And your involvement with Shane Warne is very interesting because you're playing in Sydney in his first Test match, and we'll talk about that in 1 second, but then his second Test match is in Adelaide, you look like you get dropped, and then your ninth Test match is in the Wacker, and he gets dropped and you come back in. So it might have been in Warne out Whitney and in Whitney out Warne at one stage there.
I've always reminded him, Hoggy, that he was 12th man in that Test match in Perth where I took 11 wickets in the match and he was pouring the drinks and he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I said, I'll always remember it, don't worry. But that was another big game for me. You know, I'd never taken a 10 for in first-class cricket before that match, and that's always something that you want to do. I'd taken a few 9-fers and 8-fers in matches and, but that was just one game. You know, you have those golden matches where you're not even thinking about running in, where your action is. All you're thinking about is, this is going to be an in-swinger, or I'm going to run this one across him. And
away. No, I don't know what it's like.
Well, seven. I'm only going to say it didn't happen to me too often, but it did in that game, and particularly in the second innings where I took that
4 for 68 first inning there. They're amazing figures. Yeah. And then 7 for 27 against India. Powerful batting lineup.
Yeah, they were a pretty good side, although we'd smashed them. I think we were up 3 or 4 nil by that. No, 3-0. What do we win that series? 4-0, I think. Yep. So we're up 3-0 at that stage, and they're a bit shell-shocked. We'd played pretty good. But, you know, look, sides never really lay down in Test matches, and they had a good batting lineup. And, you know, when I think about that day, was just amazing. It was, you know, perfect length, perfect line, bowling it in, on off stump, running it across them from middle and off away. All the nicks were held. You know, a couple of in-swingers for LBWs. I think Kapil Dev and maybe Muhammad Azharuddin, I can't remember. And, it was just one of those golden days. I walked off and thought, Jesus, if I could have replicated that my whole career, I would have been the greatest of all time. But, you know, it's a great day to remember. And I won the man in the match, which was just fantastic. It was a fantastic thing.
And the next Test match was in Sri Lanka, and that's one of the most amazing games of all time because Australia made 256 and Sri Lanka made 547. So you would think there's no way known Sri Lanka are going to lose. And then the second innings, your mate Greg Matthews and a young Shane Warne spin us to victory. Amazing game, that one.
Unbelievable game of cricket, one of the most amazing games I ever played in any level of cricket. For us to win that was crazy, and for AB to make the decision late in the afternoon when they looked like winning easy. I mean, Aravinda De Silva was just cruising and they were two down with about 60 to get or something like that. And he threw the ball to Shane.
Well, I thought that was Greg Matthews' decision to throw the ball there. Was it AB's?
Well, I think I think probably with a worm in his ear from Mo, because it was turning and it was pretty flat for the fast bowlers. It was the Single East Sports Club. The ground was packed and people were singing victory songs in Sri Lanka. It was going to be a huge win for them. And Mo and Shane bowled them out. And I remember the real turning point was Aravinda De Silva trying to hit, I can't remember whether it was Mo or Shane, but over the top. And AB turned around. He had 25 metres to sprint backwards, pulled his hat and sunglasses off in one motion and ran back and took this amazing catch. And that was the start of the roll. And we won the game. And I remember Mo was man of the match. I think he got the 50 in both innings and those wickets at the end. And we walked past their team lined up out on the ground for the presentation, and mate, some of their guys had tears running down their face. They were just absolutely distraught. It was an amazing game.
And they were a very good side on paper too.
Very good side and a very, very good and tough side at home. That was a tough tour. We won it 1-0, and it was the first time an Australian side had won in the subcontinent since Bill Laurie's tour, I think, somewhere in India in 1969.
It was never
really talked about. The one that Steve Waugh led to India and won, that's always talked about. Sri Lankan tour was not. The other two tests that were drawn were unbelievably hard fought down to the last day. That was a really tough tour and great to be a part of that as well.
Sounds pretty satisfying, that series as well, Mike. Great stuff. We need to get to a break, boys. Hold that. We'll be back very, very shortly. Mike Whitney with us on Halftime. It's been a great chat this afternoon with Mike Whitney on the Winter Champion Series. Hoggy, don't go ruining it now.
One game you probably don't want to talk about was the 91-92 Shield final over in Perth when New South Wales beat you, and Steve Waugh got 113, Mark Waugh got 163. You took 7 for 75 and you still lost that game. Amazing. And the teams, both teams looked like test teams.
Yeah, that was a really... Look, I played in a number of Shield finals and they were all really tough games. And a couple stand out and they're the two that I played in Perth. The first one was 82-3, which we won against all odds. And that game was just full of superstars. And unfortunately, I nicked Tom Moody to be dismissed last to lose the game. And Wayne Holdsworth had smashed 40 at the other end, I think. And we looked like we might, if I hung around for another half an hour, we might have won that match. But, yeah, again, you know, fought over 5 days and a very, very tough game.
You're not gonna blame yourself for the loss.
I wasn't the world's best batsman, but I'd been in for a little while, probably about half an hour batting with Cracker, and the thoughts were arising. We didn't need that many, probably another 30 or 40 or something like that. I can't remember, but we might have been a chance. He was smashing everything in the middle, and they were getting tired. And Big Tommy came in and pitched one, and it just left me, and I nicked it. Bummer.
You're supposed to play and miss it, Dim.
Geez, for a bloke who's played 12 tests, Mike, and 38 one days, geez, you've had a pretty good time.
Amazing time. You know, like I said earlier, I think back about it now, it was surreal. Every one of those games was incredible. The one-day cricket was fantastic. We actually won a couple of World Series cricket finals, which I played in, and got a chance to run around the ground with that trophy, and just really amazing stuff. And, very, very humbled by the whole experience. And all the people that you see around there, just having a word with you, Hoggy. You know, I love you, huge mate. Really respected you as a fast bowler. Always a lot of fun to be in your company, bro.
Well, you've seen some greats come. The start of greats' careers, you had Adam Gilchrist batting at 3 in 92-93 in the Shield final. You've seen the start of McGrath and the start of Warnie. And also the start of some pretty good New South Wales cricketers. I mean, the batting lineup in 93-94 for New South Wales was Taylor, Slater, Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, Bevan. Not a bad first five. You'd be able to go and put the shorts on and just lie around for a while, wouldn't you?
Mate, look, I think back about, the whole New South Wales career, which was sort of 80 to 94, and all of the players that I played with, the guys that I played with early doors, which you would have played against, Rick McCosker, John Dyson, Peter Toohey, Trevor Chappell, Stumper Rickson, Lenny, all these guys, amazing to play with them. And then that next era come with Stephen and Mark, Tub Taylor, Steve Small, even the guys that didn't play Test cricket, Trevor Bayliss and these sort of blokes, mate, they were really good. Mark O'Neill, really good players. And the level of that, and we got momentum in those early 80s after that 82-3 Shield win and got really hungry and just wanted to win. And, I mean, you know what it was like. When it was, we played everybody, it was on for young and old, and we were happy to lose a game trying to win it instead of it fading out to be a bloody boring draw after 4 days. So, it was, and they were all good cricketers, mate. I'm just humbled and privileged that I played with all of them. You think back now and you go, I played with the War Twins for 10 years and just watched them mark.
Did they talk to each other at any stage?
Not really. I said to Mark one night, how come they never went out with each other? Not that the team splits into things, but, three or four guys will go out that way and four or five or two will go that way. Mark and Stephen never. And I said to Mark one night, how come you and Stephen don't even hang out? Like, you don't even go for dinner together? And he went, We lived in the same room for 22 years. I don't need to talk to him at all.
It's probably a fair point.
Bit sad, bit sad.
A fair point.
Yeah, that's all he said. What he was amazing, mate. Mark Waugh was just... If you saw Mark get 20 or 120, the 20 was the best 20 you've ever seen. You know, four boundaries, the cover drive, the one off the legs, and then a two or whatever. And then Nick, just out.
Yeah. A bit like David Gower.
Absolutely. My first test wicket.
Just before you go, I haven't seen you do a sporty for a while, so I haven't heard IVA Richards for a while. Can you just give us a little bit of IVA Richards?
But you must have heard me hug you guys. I've been up for the big bash, you know, and don't stuff with the Melbourne, you know, Tim Donald, you know, that's, you know, you're talking like some individual that's making like some statement that you haven't had, you know, that Vivian been around. So, you know, that I've been around. So I got to ask you as an individual, if you ain't be seeing me, the king, over the last few months with the cricket, where have you been, Huggy?
It's a beautiful way to end what's been a fascinating chat, Mike. We can't thank you enough for your time this afternoon. Appreciate your chat with us and reliving some of the great memories of your career in international cricket. Well done. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure, Daniel. Good on you, Huggy. Lovely to talk to you, boys.
Great work, Huggy. That's another cracker from you. He was very, very good fun.
We can't beat that. That's nearly the best we've had.
Well, we're going to have to find a way to beat it some stage next week. We've got to go. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Arf.